everyone. This is Dr. Cheryl Selman, and welcome to What Women Must Know. Thank you for joining me today for another one of those great conversations that I know will really inspire you. And my intention is that this conversation, as all the conversations, will help you to transform your life and empower you with the kind of knowledge so you can make the best decisions possible for your health and well-being. I want to say hello to everyone who may be listening for the first time, and I certainly would love to invite you over to my website, which is whatwomenmustknow.com, because when you go over there and you opt in, I have all these special reports waiting for you. And for those of you that really like my show but can't always get here on time, I will be sending my radio shows out every week, so you will then be able to just, you know, listen to them at your convenience and take advantage of the great information and wisdom that happens here every week. Now, we're going to be talking about a topic that I think is really important. I know this is especially true more so for women, but not exclusively. How many of you have noticed that when you've had a really stressful day, you kind of go for maybe something out of the fridge, or maybe something hanging out in your food, you know, storage place. Maybe you go for a cookie, cake, chips. You know, you're eating because you're satisfying some emotional need, not necessarily because you are hungry. Or, you know, just had one of those stressful days, you want to unwind, or maybe you're really struggling with your weight and you find yourself making choices that don't support you. Well, we're going to be exploring the new science of mindful eating for reducing weight and emotional eating with Lisa Lutan. And we're going to kind of share with you some insights that I think will really support so many of you, not only to make the kind of relationship with food that you're really desiring, but I think you're going to find this is going to be a really useful conversation that will give you more resources, more skills, more strategies, so you can have a more, you know, enjoyable relationship with your food, and as a result, find yourself being able to lose more weight, or maybe just feeling calmer around food, or God knows what other amazing things may be waiting for you. So we have this great, great conversation in store for you today, and I'm so happy to have my guest, Lisa Lutan, here with you. She is the author of Busy, Stressed, and Food Obsessed. And a little bit more about Lisa. She's a healthy living strategist and founder of Healthy, Happy, and Hip, which provides one-on-one coaching, workshops, retreats, and support groups for clients. Her new book, Busy, Stressed, and Food Obsessed, provides tools to help highly successful superwomen slow down, chill out, develop a better relationship with food, and feel great. Her articles have been featured in numerous publications, including The Huffington Post, Better After 50, and My Body Green. And if you want to learn more about what Lisa is offering, go to healthyhappyandhip.com. So it's my great pleasure to welcome Lisa to the show today. Hello, Lisa.
Hello, Cheryl. It's so nice to be here.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you, and I'm looking forward to this conversation because I know it's a topic that really is important for so many people. It really kind of rings, you know, rings true to so many who are having a less than wonderful relationship with food.
I think for so many women, we are all having a less than perfect relationship with food, and it comes in a lot of different flavors. But it's not an issue of even weight. Women of all sizes are still struggling with their relationship with food because it's so confusing to all of us.
Well, I you know, it's a really important topic and an issue to explore. And I know that part of your journey came from your own personal relationship with food. So maybe we can start by just sharing a bit about what was it in your life that you dealt with that brought you to making this work, you know, such a passion, a passionate purpose for you?
Well, in my 20s, I co-founded a technology company. And way back then, these were the days when it wasn't really cool to have a startup company yet. My boyfriend and I, who later became my husband, we would work, 15-hour days every day and exist on junk food. We'd pick up a chocolate croissant for breakfast. We'd grab a pizza for lunch. And many nights, dinner was a pint of Ben and Jerry's ice cream with a couple spoons because we were working hard. We didn't know better back then. And what I didn't realize was that after years of eating like that and living an incredibly stressful life of this bootstrap startup company, my body was really becoming depleted in a terrible way. And although I got warning signals, which I didn't realize at the time, it wasn't until I literally got hit in the head with a hammer and collapsed one day that I had to wake up and say, wow, this isn't working for me anymore. And my collapse came, by that point, I had had 2 out of 3 of my children. I'd moved into a home. I was still working crazy like so many working moms. I was just keeping it all together, and I ended up in the emergency room thinking I was having a stroke. Now, the good news is I did not have a stroke. The bad news is that it sent me into a downward spiral of feeling terrible, having all these alien things going on in my body, not getting answers from doctors. All I was getting was prescriptions, and I was not interested in prescriptions because nobody could tell me what was wrong with me. And so after a while, after being depressed and sad and frustrated and trying to still work and be a mom and do all those things I was supposed to do, I said, I got to figure this thing out. And we didn't have Google back then, so I couldn't just start, doing that and researching. I started reading books, and I started trying to piece together the mystery of what had happened to me. And eventually I did. I was exhausted. I had anxiety that I didn't know. I had a history of migraines I didn't even know. And so then I had to get better. And since I could not find any answers or anybody to tell me how to get better, I had to look at my body, and I had to start listening to my body. And I started paying attention. I started paying attention to how did food affect me? How did exercise affect me? What about stress? What about, attitude? What about caffeine? What about meditation? And for around 20 years, I became my own human experiment of figuring out what worked for me. And the good news is very quickly I started feeling better. And I thought, if I feel better, what would it take to feel great? And I continued for many years along these lines. Eventually I did go back to school for holistic nutrition and plenty of other trainings. And now I help others connect their own dots and figure out what will it take for their particular body to feel great, because we're all different.
That story is such a common story. As a naturopath and as a clinician focusing on women's health, I have to say that your story is repeated over and over again. It's women who are just finding themselves so stressed out. They're working long hours. They're trying to cope with the family or relationship. And pregnancy on its own demands such nutrition from our bodies. And if we are already depleted and we're pushing ourselves, we just find ourselves adrenally exhausted, and that impacts our sleep, our mental attitude, our energy, our hormones, our immune system, and you name it, everything goes down the gurgler when we're just pushing our bodies beyond its capacity to function. And, of course, if we're not eating well or we're not absorbing and assimilating our nutrition, because you can be eating well but not absorbing, then the body doesn't have the ability to rebuild and regenerate. So this is such a big problem that I see happening to women of all ages.
And you know what, Cheryl? When I had my first child and I was in the throes of all this crazy, intense stress and not taking care of myself, I didn't make breast milk. I couldn't even feed my child. She got failure to thrive. Nobody ever mentioned to me, maybe you're the one that's failing to thrive here. Maybe you're not doing something right here. I look back and I go, oh, my goodness, it's so obvious what was going on. But at the time, it never occurred to me.
And that would have added so much more stress to you, because now you have all the judgments about why you can't make breast milk and be there to nourish your child, and you know, disappointments. There's so many emotional issues that go along with that. And, you know, it's so true. When you are under this constant, unrelenting stress, every system of your body is compromised, every system. And then it kind of overflows onto the emotional and mental, and even your spiritual perception is affected.
Oh, I couldn't agree with you more. And the problem is, we're in this world where we feel like we have to be super women. And that if we're not doing it all and going through it, that there's something wrong with us, because she's doing it. What's wrong with me? And you're so right. When I couldn't feed my child and I was postpartum and, you know, I was tired and I was really depleted, and all I kept thinking is, I can't feed my child. I can't feed my child. And it was devastating on me emotionally, spiritually, every way you mentioned. So I think that, you know, there are signs. We're just not listening. And it's not until we get really sick or we get injured or some big thump on the head that we start making these changes.
And the other thing that that is so important about your story is that, you know, you go to a medical practitioner and they don't see any chronic illness, and they just pass it off as, either, you know, they don't understand, it's all in your head. And the whole understanding of stress and adrenal exhaustion is not really taught to medical doctors, I would say. And I've had women in my classes tell me that they've gone into their doctors saying, I think I'm adrenally exhausted. And their doctors would say, what's that? So the kind of help and guidance we need to really address these, you know, underlying issues, I call them the root cause issues, are not in the domain of the medical model, at least not until recently. And that's only if you have a functional medicine or integrative medical doctor who understands this. As a naturopath, and of course it was my own personal journey that led me to understand adrenal exhaustion, you know, 25 years ago, because like you, I had to figure it out for myself because no one could help me. But, you know, now in more holistic approaches, it's so easily identified. In fact, it's, you know, it's obvious. It's obvious what's going on with people when they have so many of these symptoms, when you just spend a little time to talk to them.
Boy, I wish I had met you when I was going through this.
Yeah.
That's all I can say. And people thought I was crazy. Doctors thought I was crazy. They're like, oh, it's just stress. No big deal. You know, and
Did they offer you antidepressants?
They offered me anti-anxiety medication quite
right.
a bit.
Right.
And, you know, I was one of these people on the outside. I was cool as a cucumber. So I was like, what are you talking about? I mean, yeah, I did have major anxiety. I was just taught to suck it in, you know, instead of express it. So I didn't even know I had anxiety until I read the bottle, you know, and I said, why are they giving me this? They never even bothered to tell me what it was for. And it was a good thing that I didn't start popping pills. I really did seek out natural alternatives. But it was the changes that I made to my lifestyle that ultimately healed me and keep me well.
So let's talk about some of the key teachings that you glean from these experiences and that you are sharing in the courses that you're doing and in your book, Busy, Stressed, and Food Obsessed. Where shall we go from here?
There's so many places we can go. I think the most important thing that I'll say is that to slow down and listen to our bodies. I think that's the number one thing that I would say to women everywhere is, you know, take that time to take that breath. And whether you have a meditation practice or you can just take literally some deep breaths during the day, that's going to help you so much to understand what's going on in your body and understand what your body needs, you know, from nutritionally, spiritually, you know, physically, in every way. Because you can be doing all the right things, but if you're not listening to your body, you don't know if they're the right things for you. So that's number one.
Okay. So
Okay, and what's number two?
Well, let's talk about the concept of mindful eating. I love talking about mindful eating because people think of it in different ways. And I think that some people hear about mindful eating and they think, okay, sitting down, not eating in my car, not eating in front of a computer, and that's a really important thing. But I like to blow it out to a much larger concept. And when we sit down and we eat a meal, if we take a couple minutes to really first look at it, smell it, think about it. You know, where did this food come from? How did it make its way from a farm, hopefully from a farm rather than a factory, somewhere onto my plate? And when I taste it, is it crunchy? Is it creamy? Do I like crunchy? Do I like creamy? Like, it should be an experience, not just shoving it in, you know, so you can get out the door. You should really love the food you're eating, and when it's healthy and fresh and delicious, you can't not love it. So we start by appreciating the food, appreciating the texture, the taste, the spices, whatever's in there. And then we can move out another level, and we can appreciate, well, what is this food bringing into my body? You know, is this food bringing in good nutrients? Is this food bringing in good, healthy things? Like if you take a tomato that grew on a vine, it's bringing in all this energy from the sun, all these nutrients from the earth. When we take in a box of packaged cookies, we're taking in preservatives that have been helping those cookies sit on the shelf for 2 years. So we want to really think about, what is it that our body is going to get out of this food? And then there's a piece of mindful eating that people don't talk about that much that I think is really important. And that is, who else is at the table with me? If I'm eating alone, then I can really have this one-on-one experience with my food. But what if there's other people at the table with me? Well, I think that's really important to be mindful of who's there. Is this a shared experience? I look at them, I hear them, I see them, and I want them to look at me, hear me, and see me. Because that's what makes it going from just eating to dining and making it a beautiful experience. And when we're trying to feel satiated and full, it's not just the food. It's the environment, it's the love, it's the whole experience that's going to make us feel satisfied. So there's so many levels to this. It's a metaphor for how we live. How we eat is how we live. And we can grab a bar in the car, or we can sit, eat mindfully, and really feel good.
So this mindful eating is so interesting, and I want to talk more about it. But you had some issues with food at one point in your life, didn't you?
I think I still have issues with food. I think that food is an ongoing issue for most people, but I feel like I'm in a great place now. But as I age and get older, I'm constantly having to tweak and adjust and listen to my body. So I think that sugar was a really big issue for me for most of my life. I grew up, I was a skinny kid, and I could eat cupcakes and pizza and cookies and ice cream, and it wasn't a big deal. Nobody thought twice about it because I was skinny. But when I went to college, you know, that ended fast, and I realized that it was a problem for me, that once I started, I couldn't stop, just like many, many other women and men out there. And I experimented with it for many years until I found a way to deal with it in my life. And that's one of the reasons now I offer courses to help people, challenges, you know, get the sugar out of their system. Like, I call it Ditch the Sugar Itch. I have another one called Eat to Thrive, where we give up gluten and dairy and soy and alcohol and sugar just to experiment. You know, these are ways to listen to your body. Does my body like this? Does it not? I'm developing another program right now called Lose the Booze because I'm finding so many women are drinking more than they'd like to be drinking. Even if they're just social drinkers, they're just drinking a little bit too much and it's impacting their health. So I like people to take these things out, see how good they can feel without them, and then go back and decide how they want to live their life with better data.
So when we talk about
food addictions or eating addictions. You know, I noticed that for myself, and I'm sure that's something people can relate to, is, you know, you get involved in your work and you're working during the day and it's the meal time and you just kind of have a bowl of something sitting next to you and you take a bite and you're back on the computer or you know, you're back on the phone. So food becomes this automatic behavior that you have no awareness of what's going on, how it's tasting, and how much you are eating, because you're not giving attention to it. You're involved with everything else. You're distracted from this act of eating. And it's a really bad habit, but it's more than that, because when we are not paying attention, being mindful, just eating, just shoveling it in, the body processes it differently. And it is affecting how it's digested, absorbed, assimilated. It has a total different mechanism of digestion than if you had a more mindful approach, if you were slower, if you just put your attention totally on eating with awareness.
That's a great point. And I want to explain it in a way to people that maybe they haven't heard it before. Many people have heard that expression of being chased by a tiger, you know, let's call that stress mode. And our bodies don't really know the difference if we're being chased by a tiger or if we're frustrated in traffic. All it knows is that we are not happy and that we are in this mode of non-relaxation. And when we get into that mode, that fight or flight mode, anything that's not essential, like digestion, you know, is going to slow down or stop completely because it has to focus on getting us out of danger. So when we're eating in this stress mode, our digestion is really not working all that well. And that's another reason when we slow down, whether it's we're eating or taking those breaths that I mentioned before, we're letting our body know that we're not in danger. And when our body knows we're not in danger, all of our systems work better. And that's why we're going to have better overall health. But when we stay in that stress mode 24/7, which many people do, think about that impact on your body. It's really, really, really a recipe for disaster.
And most people are in that stress response all the time, at least throughout the day. And then when they want to finally unwind, that's when they come home and have their bowl of ice cream or
a drink or what else. You're right. You're right.
Yeah.
And so we're using food, you know, for so many reasons other than nourishment. You know, we're using food has this beautiful way of saying, do you need a best friend? I'll be your best friend. You need a confidant? I'm here. You know, food sneaks in to fill the voids in our life. And another thing is going on that I see quite a bit. We have this feeling like it's not okay to take a break. We feel like sometimes what we really need, actually we're not feeling, but the truth is sometimes we really need a nap or we need to walk outside or we need just a break from our work. And that's not all that acceptable in a lot of work environments. But it is acceptable to say, I think I need a snack. I'll be right back. And so we're using that snack, and we're associating that snack as the break. And over time, we don't even recognize that it's not. We're not even hungry for food at all. But what we're really hungry for, we're not getting. And so this has become our go-to replacement. And going back to being mindful, when we start paying attention to what's really going on, we can start discerning, am I even hungry? Or do I just need a break?
Well, I have to say this mindful eating approach is gaining a lot of credibility. In fact, there's a lot of research in a recent Harvard Health letter. They were devoting that whole section to mindful eating. And they were talking about research that has been going on that is looking at this very thing, being more mindful, taking your time, eating in silence, observing your food, just, you know, really paying attention. And they you know, a lot of these studies are finding that it's really helping people who tend to binge eat to stop binging, and they are being able to manage weight for people who have issues with weight or issues with, you know, depression. It's really interesting. In fact, there's there's a one researcher who was given $8 million by the NIH to study mindful eating techniques for treatment of binge eating. It's a lot of money to go into research. And what was discovered in this research is that everything you're saying, mindful eating, stopping, slowing down, you know, really slowing down, going very slow, being very aware, smelling, savoring, you know, experiencing the textures, had a huge impact on assisting people to stop their binge eating and all the associated issues that go with that, which is, you know, going back to these more ancient Zen practices, Buddhist practices of being mindful of being in the present time and what you're doing. I find that really exciting to see this research coming out.
I find it really exciting, too. And, you know, all of us have had that experience where you start eating something, you go, oh, my God, where did it disappear to? Because our mind was in another place, not on the plate. And that's why we're just not satisfied. So when we actually look at the food and smell it, put the fork down, take a break, slow down, we have time to digest. We have time to appreciate the eating experience. You know, when you're standing there at the fridge and pulling everything out, how much are you really tasting that food? You're not really. So making the time to sit down and enjoy is just a beautiful thing. I'll tell you a story. I remember one time I was in Paris, and I was in the flea market, and wandering this giant flea market. I'm wandering around and for hours and hours, and I see at lunchtime one of the little booths, they take a fold-out table, they put a tablecloth down, they set the table, and they dine and they have their lunch. Now, that would not happen in this country. They would go grab some takeout and sit there eating while they're working. And I was just so moved by this beautiful example of dining and enjoying their food in the middle of the workday, in the middle of this crazy, you know, frantic flea market. And so that's always stayed with me. And people always say, but I don't have time. I don't have time. Well, we have time for things that are important to us. And we have time if we make it a priority. And it's if you want to feel healthy, you have to find 10 minutes in your day to sit down and have a lunch that's slow and nourishing and mindful.
You know, I think, you know, we're talking about really intentionally making choices that support us. And I just want to throw in one incentive to encourage people to try this. And that is the work on a man, who I mentioned to you earlier before our interview called Mark Wallman, I think he's a PhD, if at all. But Mark Robert Waldman is someone who has a program that is called NeuroWisdom. And it's working with behaviors that can intentionally change our brains so we can make other choices and have other actions available to us. And he talks a lot about this mindful eating approach. And he has been working with scientists who do brain scans. So they actually see the changes that go on in the brains of people who practice mindful eating. And one of the things that he was saying that I found so profound is that through these brain scans, they see that a unique change happens in the part of the brain that gives you conscious control over the decisions and actions that you take. So we're not just enjoying the more sensual aspects of a meal, by being more mindful, we are literally changing the way the brain is wired that is allowing us to have this more conscious control over the actions and decisions we make, which is pretty powerful when you think about that.
I think that's very powerful, and I think that's really what meditation gives us as well, you know, creating new neural pathways to just a different way of being. And in the same way that meditation, you know, we are taught to notice the thoughts, you know, and then just maybe push them to the side, notice the thoughts go by without becoming entwined in those thoughts. Well, it's the same thing with food. You know, our thoughts are going to be coming, and we want to notice the thoughts. You know, just because we're hearing, I'm hungry for the bagel, I'm hungry for the bagel, it doesn't necessarily mean that we have to engage with that thought. We just observe that thought and say, okay, I see you, I hear you. And learning to understand that many of these thoughts are not really truth, they're just our brain sending out lots of chatter to us, and we need to sit down and say, what's really going on here? Am I really hungry? Am I tired? Am I lonely? Am I bored? And then we can start putting together an eating plan that makes sense for us. And it's more a mindful life plan, living, you know, intentionally, mindfully, rather than just being crazy, busy, stressed, and going through emotions and not thinking about anything.
So why do you think this is more of an issue for women than men?
I think it does affect a lot of men, but I think for women, in my experience, food has become a major source of pleasure. And the reason is, it's first of all, if we go back in history, women were the ones who had to do the food thing. And I'm saying even modern history, we're the ones who were going to the market. We were the ones that were cooking the food. We're the ones that are packing the lunches, calling the caterers. You know, we're always the ones in charge of the food thing. Not always, but most of the time. So food was on our brain to begin with. Now we live in a world where cookbooks are gorgeous, and they're like number one bestsellers. You can't turn on the TV without seeing a cooking show. You look at social media and you see anything from kale chips to ooey gooey snickerdoodle stuffed brownies, you know, oozing chocolate. Food is everywhere. And when we are living in that crazy world of stress, sometimes we want to check out mentally. And so where do we go? We go to pleasure, and food is on our mind already, so we think about food. And because we think about food, we assume we're hungry. But it's not that. It's just that we like thinking about food. You know, we're sitting there thinking about food. It's easily available. It's delicious. It, like I said, it'll be our best friend, whatever it is. And so I think for women, it's this beautiful, delicious, yummy thing. And then you add all this other pressure on the other side to look a certain way. Food, we're torn because we're like, oh, I want that. That's so yummy, but that's going to make me fat. And then we go through this vicious cycle of beating ourselves up, depriving ourselves of that pleasure, beating ourselves up when we are eating it, and we get into these vicious cycles that make us crazy.
So what are some of your favorite strategies that you could impart to people who are listening to our conversations so they can take some action steps to help them out of some of these behaviors and cycles that they find themselves in?
I think you have to understand yourself as an eater. And number one, take out the judgment, you know, take out the shame and look at it, put on your investigative, your detective cap, I like to say, and start looking at everything as interesting. You know, isn't it interesting that I ate that cookie? You know, why? Not because I was bad. Not because I have no willpower. Why? Was I hungry? Was I looking for a boost? Was I tired? And just start looking at things, you know, scientifically. And then all of a sudden, you'll start making connections. Then another thing I would recommend is start connecting foods not about calories or fat or, you know, how much protein, but how, what is this food doing to make me feel? And when we start doing that, interesting things start happening. Like, oh, isn't that interesting when I eat dairy, my stomach bloats? Or isn't that interesting when I eat sugar, I get anxious? Isn't that interesting? And we start noticing that we get drawn to foods that make us feel good. And like, isn't that interesting that when I ate that fresh salad, I felt light and great? And so when we take out the emotion and we look at it and we look at how we feel, we're going to be drawn to healthy food. So that's another tip. And I'll give you one more tip. One more tip is take a pause before you eat anything and ask yourself a couple questions. You know, am I hungry for this food? If I take a bite, am I going to eat if I take that first chip, am I going to eat the whole bag? And that's understanding your own triggers, you know, and be realistic about it. And then am I going to beat myself up afterwards? And how am I going to feel? Am I going to be mad at myself? So when you have that little conversation, you don't have to beat yourself up after, because you either decided, yes, I'm going to have it, or no, I'm not. And then you just, it's okay when we understand what's going on.
So I know you've been doing a lot of teaching and retreats and workshops. Do you have some inspiring stories from people who have done programs with you and what's changed in their lives?
Oh, my goodness, so many. For a while, I started running my Eat to Thrive program where we gave up sugar, dairy, gluten, soy, and alcohol for 1 week. 1 week, mind you. And I had hundreds of people run through that program. It was very popular. I kept repeating it. And the things I saw after 1 week were shocking. You know, people were reporting joint pain disappearing. They were reporting, you know, more energy. They were reporting less bloating, clearer eyes, happier attitude, increased sex drive. And when I say these things, I say them because everyone was different. Not every person had these things. Each one had a different experience, and that was beautiful because that's my whole point. We're all different, and we have to take time to understand how our body is going to react to these things. And it's a fun process. It doesn't have to be a stressful process. So those were amazing stories. I've had people that will, you know, send me emails, I'm craving vegetables, I can't even believe it, you know. And I'm so excited for them. Then we understand, because, you know, if you start, the more healthy food you eat, the more you're going to crave healthy food. And it happens so quickly. And, yeah, I've seen wonderful success stories. Very exciting.
You know, 1 week sounds like such a short period of time, but it actually can be enough to see some real changes if people start eliminating some of the foods that have an inflammatory toxic effect on the body.
Exactly. And then after that week, we bring back the foods one at a time so we can pinpoint what food it is. And many people say, oh, my God, I feel so great. I want to continue. But if I had said to them up front, oh, you should do this for 2 or 3 weeks, they'd be, no way, I never could do it. But after even 3 or 4 days, you feel so much better. You feel empowered. You go, this is really actually easier than I thought. Then you're able to continue. But a lot of programs out there say 30 days, 21 days, and it's very daunting for people. They just say, I could never do that. But most people say, I could do anything for a week.
So you go cold turkey for 7 days of
cold
sugar
turkey of
and alcohol.
Yeah.
Gluten.
And I have found that, you know, because I've done plenty of experimenting with sugar and all that, but I've found that when people give up the all at the same time, it's actually easier than just giving up, say, sugar. Because so many times, you know, we think we're giving up sugar, but sugar's hiding in so many other products like salad dressings and breads and pasta sauces and all these things that we never expect to find sugar. So when we give it up completely, people start really reading labels, and it's so eye-opening for them what ingredients are really in the foods that they're eating.
I remember I was talking to another guest, and she went to a center that practiced an Ayurvedic approach of really detoxification and regeneration. It was like a weekend thing, so it was 48 hours. And she went through these processes, and in 48 hours, she felt like a totally different person.
Isn't that amazing?
It doesn't take long, yeah.
Yeah. I think that's the point, you know, to all these listeners, that literally in a couple days, you can feel really crappy. I had a woman that called me 2 weeks ago. She read my book, and she said, I did your program in the book, and I felt really good, but then I didn't do the process, and I didn't keep it up, and I'm feeling really bad. And I said, okay. She just called me randomly. I said, I want you to get right back on now and call me in a week. And literally, she called me the next week, and it was like I was speaking to a different person. Like the first person felt like she was going through this downward spiral. She felt depressed. She felt out of control. And 1 week later, she goes, I feel great again. I'm so excited. I feel like I can do this. And it was just amazing to hear this in such a short time. So that's the message. Like, it really does happen quickly. And once you're feeling better, you're in a better place to make better choices.
So I hear two things that I think are important in this process. Number one, it's understanding the addictive nature of those foods that we crave, or either from the fact that they are addictive, like sugar, or they have ingredients in them that are additives of some sort, chemicals of some sort, that cause us to crave them. Do you want to say something about that aspect of foods?
Yeah, I think that people are so busy beating themselves up, and I say it's not your fault. I think willpower is for superheroes. I think that when we can understand how foods affect us, then we can come up with strategies around it. You know, there are many foods that many people can't stop once they start, and manufacturers know that. And they're actually, you know, testing those combination of ingredients to make it so you will keep going. So they'll sell more product. So it's up to you to take responsibility and do some experimenting and say, okay, I know once I start with pasta, I can't stop. Okay, fine. So maybe, you know, only eat pasta in a restaurant where you don't have an unlimited quantity. Or maybe try zucchini noodles. You know, there's so many different strategies once you have the information. But you have to take time to understand how these foods impact you. Taking the blame, taking away the guilt, taking away all the shame, and just say, I'm going to get to the bottom of this because I'm tired of battling with food. Food
and that's
a wonderful experience, not, you know, painful like it is for so many people.
And that's where people start with mindfulness, just paying attention, as you were saying earlier, just being curious about what's
being
going
curious.
On.
Exactly. Being curious. Exactly. I love that. Curious. Isn't that interesting?
Yes.
Isn't that interesting?
It's one of my
yes.
favorite phrases, isn't that interesting? Because you're just stepping back and going into that observer space, which gives you a moment instead of just reacting automatically. You have a pause, like you like to say, a pause to observe. The other thing that I hear you say, and I know it's been in research, is the value of being part of a community and having other people to be support systems.
That's a really, really important thing that I have found through my work. You know, originally I was going to offer these programs just when somebody wanted it or, you know, one-on-one, and I very quickly found that when someone joined a group, they did it. They just said, I have this support. If she can do it, I can do it. And there was this amazing camaraderie and just something that I had never anticipated. And that's why I started taking all these programs and putting them as starting at the same time, ending at the same time, and building communities within them. Because I can't reiterate the power of a group support effort. It's huge.
So it's a really important point. People who are listening who want to explore what we've been talking about can find a friend who may want to explore with them and get that kind of support. I once interviewed Dr. Michael Roizen, who's from the Cleveland Clinic. He's head of the alternative therapies department, division, whatever they have over there. And he was saying in his program for exercise, he makes all the staff members, all these 10,000 people part of the Cleveland Clinic are involved in his program, actually. And he always has someone working with a buddy. So if they're walking, if they're doing 10,000 steps a day, he has them work with a buddy because there's something about having someone that keeps you accountable and you can share the experience with, and they just, you know, you're showing up for each other, that creates greater success than if you just did it on your own.
I'm a big fan of accountability partners, and I love that, partnering people. I think another thing that's really interesting is that, you know, women have no problem. Many women love exercise classes for that reason. You know, there's music, there's fun, there's other women, and it's great. And men always shied away from that. And somebody told me recently, I don't know if this is fact or fiction, but CrossFit came about because it was a class originally geared for men. And it took off, like, so unbelievably. Men and women do it. But men finally found this class that they could be a part of, that they felt was cool, not like going to a woman's class. And I think it just really emphasizes the amazing quality of working out. We're tribal, of being with other people, doing these things with other people, and hopefully people that are going to, you know, they're going to rub off on us in good ways.
So, you know, we're coming to the end of our conversation today. Is there something else that you want to add that we didn't get to cover that you think is important?
I think for women, this is such a hard thing, you know, in our lives, you know, the food thing. And the reason I wrote my book, Busy, Stressed, and Food Obsessed, was I was tired of books that were just telling everybody, you have to eat that, and you can't eat that, and you have to do this, and you can't do this. I think that people are tired of being told what to do. And so I tried to write a different book. I tried to give a step-by-step series of ways of figuring out for yourself. I know you're smart. I know you've tried everything already. I know you know what it takes, what feeling good feels like and what feeling bad. And this will just guide you through a process to get yourself on track again and again and figure out these questions that we've been talking about. So I think I'll leave you with that.
Well, that's great, and I just want to remind people that they can go to Lisa's website. We're talking to Lisa Lutan. The website is healthyhappyandhip.com, and her book, if you want to learn some of these strategies, is called Busy, Stress, and Food Obsessed. And I certainly encourage people to explore some of these options. I think what you're offering is really simple yet profound. It's bringing back some of these ancient wisdoms of the power of meditation, which certainly the mindful meditation world is a growing world. We're finding so many applications for mindfulness in our lives. With great success, and now that there are more brain scans out there that are seeing the evidence of what happens when we bring in mindfulness. And I also wanted to say that when I was looking at some of the research on mindful eating, the studies found that when people meditate as well as practice this slow, intentional, mindful eating, they were even more successful. So I encourage people to take up a meditative practice because I do think it plays a major role in overall success and healing, and then it can be applied in mindful eating approaches as well.
I couldn't agree more.
So you know, these are great strategies, and I think that, you know, a big message that you've shared with us today, Lisa, is that there's always a way through and a way out of whatever may be our challenges in life. And often those challenges, certainly you went through your challenges, have led you to this purpose and passion that you are sharing with people all over the world. So I always like to encourage people to understand that the challenges that they have in the moment could very well be the whole catalyst to opening up their lives, to finding their greater purpose and passion. It's I always talk about the wounded healer. I think anyone in the healing arts has gone through their health challenges, and through their challenges had to find answers. And for many, it led them to, you know, move into this direction where they're sharing with other people in a variety of ways.
Exactly. Our worst experiences are our best teachers.
So it gives hope to everybody, because often when we're caught in the middle of our own dramas, we can't see the forest through the trees. And I certainly want to inspire people to take on whatever challenge they may find themselves in the moment, whether it's dealing with food, whether it's dealing with their bodies, whether it's dealing with relationships. And just, as you said, stand back and be in that mindful place and say, you know, what am I observing about this? How am I reacting? How am I feeling? How is this tasting? However they want to explore that mindful approach, because just that intention to do that will open up avenues of insight and flashes of intuition, connections happen, things start to move them into a new place of awareness, which leads them out of their struggle and into a world of new possibilities and healing.
Yeah, that's beautifully put.
Mm. So anyway, thank you, Lisa, for sharing with us today. My guest is Lisa Lutan. She is the author of Busy Stress and Food Obsessed, and her website is healthyhappyandhip.com. So go over there, check it out. Learn more about the strategies that will keep you empowered so you can make the best choices in your life. So, Lisa, thank you so much for sharing your journey with us and your wonderful work.
Thank you for having me.
You're so welcome. And to all my listeners, thank you for joining me again today. And remember, as always, honor the wisdom of your feminine self. Bye for now.